Bring It On is a public affairs program exploring the people, issues, and events affecting the African-American communities in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Bring It On is a forum for the people, by the people, produced by an independent team of volunteers working at the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana,
and financially supported by listeners like you.
Randall, and welcome to Bring It On, a multiple award-winning program, and we are Indiana's only weekly community radio show committed to exploring the people, issues, and events impacting the African-American community.
And good evening, I'm Cornelius Wright, and in today's broadcast, you'll also hear our perspective on what's relevant in the African-American world of news and local events of interest, all in the next hour on Bring It On.
But first, a historical look back. Juke joints like the bars of today. Juke joints cater to the rural workforce that began to emerge after the emancipation, primarily black establishments. Juke joints were opened in the southeastern United States during the era of Jim Crow laws. Since black sharecroppers and plantation workers were barred from white establishments, juke joints provided a space for these people to kick back after a long week of work.
The word juke means disorderly in Gula, meaning that these gathering spots were considered very rowdy for this era, frowned upon by many people during this time. People socialized with friends while eating, drinking, and gambling in these ramshack buildings. During the era of Prohibition, moonshine was a popular item distributed in these establishments, creating even more criticism from the outside community.
Despite the criticism they received, juke joints affected the cultural structure of the southern United States, giving blacks a place to get away from the pressures of society and eventually giving them a voice.
Liz Mitchell and Gladys Devane are here to talk about Mama Minnie's Juke Joint event scheduled for this coming Saturday night, where all the proceeds will support the fall performance of Resilience, Indiana's Untold Stories. Ladies, welcome to Bring It On.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Welcome.
Well, before we get to the juke joint, let's talk a little bit about resilience.
Okay. What would you like to know? Anything specific?
Everything. From the inception to the trials and tribulations that you're going through to get it made and just how it's coming.
Okay. I'll start off, Gladys.
Okay.
I am just passionate about African-American history and culture. Passionate about it because our folk are awesome. And to think of how our ancestors got here, had nothing, and the achievements we made, I just wanted to sponge in on that. How, why, when, where. So I started doing all the reading. Then I started traveling to see what it was I read about and talk to people who were at certain events. Like I went to Money, Mississippi, and found an elderly gentleman there that was there the night that Emmett Till was taken and then later murdered. Just to find his perspective of stuff, because who's going to interview this man? At that time, he was a little kid himself. And I had never heard that most of the Caucasians in the town got up and left. No one ever reported that. So you get a different side. You hear a different side. And it's so exciting to hear how we overcome stuff like that. So I do travel, I read and travel on things that I'm really interested in. And so Gladys and I got together. She is a writer and actress, and she heard me telling these stories and go, hey, we need to put this in a play. And we heard about the bicentennial. This was last year. And early this year, was it January, Gladys? February, we put in for the grant.
The final day of receiving applications was well before then, because they gave us the results in, I think it was February.
So we heard that Indiana's going to celebrate the bicentennial. Okay. We should tell some of these stories. Mm-hmm. So we wrote the play last year, and we wrote a grant. We knew our grant was off. You know, when we do something, we know it's got to be better than average. And we had a friend, a copyright editor, read it. We knew that what we turned in was A++. When we went to hear the reviews of all the grants, ours got rave reviews. How could it not? And I'm hunching glass. We got this in the bag. We got it, girl. We got it.
And I said to her, don't be so sure.
Okay. It was interesting that before we went to hear the reviews, one of our friends said, you're not going to get that grant.
And this was not an African American.
You're not going to get it. And I go, huh? When you come back, we'll talk.
Was she on the commission?
No.
The commission was not diverse, and that's one of the reasons she knew we wouldn't get it. They're celebrating the birthday, so they pat themselves on the back. And then our stories, most people would probably not consider them celebratory, but I think so because we're talking about the resilience of people. So when you come to our play, don't be prepared to feel down and out. You're going to feel jubilant. When you hear these stories that are not in the history books about Indiana, about Monroe County and other counties and what we went through, but how we come out on top, you're going to walk out of there proud. Everybody is, because it took all of us, black and white, to get through these struggles. So we're not putting any race down and said, boy, you did this to us, you did that. It's not about that. We're not playing a blame game. We are simply telling the truth. And with the help of our community, we're telling our story. We didn't get the grant. That made us stronger. We came back to Bloomington and...
In fact, Bloom Magazine was publishing an 8-page article about resilience. And that article was supposed to be aired in the February, I believe it was, the February issue of Bloom. We got back from the review late January, or maybe it was even late January. And I immediately called and said, scrap it. We didn't get the grant. We can't do it. And Malcolm said, oh, no, I will not scrap it, and you will do it, because these are stories that need to be told. All Indiana need to hear these stories. And the second person that said to us, well, our partner was and is Ivy Tech Community College. And the chancellor at Ivy Tech, when we told her that we didn't get the grant, she said, but you are going to do it, aren't you? And our response was, well, we can't come up with that kind of money. She said, oh, yes, you can. If you decide you want to do it, you can come up with that kind of money. You must do this. And the third person that pushed us was Bob Hamill. Bob Hamill said, you must do this. You cannot not do this. So we said, okay. And off we went to try to raise the funds, generate the funds in order to do this. Mm-hmm. However, we had to cut back severely because we were initially going for a budget of $35,000 to $40,000. It was a full-blown production, and it was going to be quite costly. So then the idea was, what can we do to tell the story but cut back on the financial expenses associated? And thus we came up with a different way of approaching it. We had to cut out some stories, and we had big fights about the stories we would cut out.
Oh, yeah. We went around and around because, you know, how can you not tell this? And how can you, it was a tough decision to go through 15 to 20 stories and pull out 7.
Now, that being said, without giving away too much, because we want everyone in Bloomington to come out and support this play, what are some of the stories that we're going to see in the play and some of the stories that were cut out?
Okay. I'm not going to tell the endings. I'm just going to give you a little snippet. But before I do that, I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you to Charlie Nams.
Because oh, yes.
I mean, Charlie, he's the man. He just didn't have lip service. He opened up his checkbook.
He was the first to open up his checkbook.
The first one to open up his checkbook for a significant amount. Charlie Nams, I love you. And every time I see him, I tell him that. Okay, on with resilience. You have heard of the Tuskegee Airmen experiment, the syphilis?
Yes.
There was an experiment done here in Indiana.
Oh, really?
Yes, ma'am.
Don't tell them too much about it.
I won't tell you.
Okay.
But it involved children, okay? There's an experiment that involved black children.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, so that's one of our stories. Some of the stories that are not going to be in the play, and that way you won't be able to give away anything.
Okay.
And we'll still be able to get the gist of what's going to be going on.
Oh, boy. Well, of course, anything you knew about, we weren't going to put in a play. Everybody knows about Madam C.J. Walker.
Right.
That was pointless. We had several escape through the Underground Railroad stories that we had to eliminate. We've kept one or two that pertain to Monroe County. One of them we had to eliminate was of a man and his family. They were rather light-complected. There was a white woman in Madison, Indiana, right now I can't think of her name, that helped them cross over from the Kentucky side over the Ohio River, and they put flour on their faces and hands and then hid their children in the back in a little hidden compartment in the buckboard of the wagon and came over through Madison, Indiana, and made it through Levi Coffin and from there on up through Canada. This family learned how to read and write while they were in Canada and wrote letters back saying we made it and thank you and kind of had a communication going on. This particular white woman, I wish I could think of her name, bless her heart, she went to prison for her Underground Railroad activities, and she was the first female to be incarcerated in the Kentucky penitentiary. So I'm thinking that story needs to be on its own at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. And maybe by then I could recall her name, because you can look that up. Some of the things that we're leaving out that we feel so strongly about, our program would be an educational program, and we will put some things in that. And you can go online to look things up and do further research on the stories that we are including in Resilience.
One of the stories, one of the topics that we are having to get rid of, maybe not get rid of completely, is this whole notion of Indiana was not a slave state. Well, Indiana had slaves, and Indiana had a lot of slaves, and some very important people in Indiana had slaves. I've written two stories about Indiana women who sued for their freedom. It wasn't called slavery. It was called involuntary servitude.
Okay. Like indentured servants?
Indentured servants.
So they had like a time period to serve.
That's right. And what would happen is they would bring them over from Tennessee and Kentucky, and they would free them.
Okay.
And they would have to turn around on the spot and sign an agreement that they would provide services for, well, one up to 90 years.
That's ridiculous. I've never heard of an indentured
up
service.
Up to 90
It's usually like 10 years or something like that,
no,
right?
Not if you're African-American.
No. And also there was a difference between servitude for criminals, 5-7 years.
Okay.
Servitude that I call slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were two women in particular.
Okay.
And I'm thinking we're going to have to eliminate both of them. So we're trying to figure out a way that we can talk about this and not present the full-blown story.
Well, and another story we had to eliminate, and we went around and around about this one. There was a man named Bush who mailed himself up to the Levi Coffin House in a box.
I've heard of him.
And he arrived at their store in this box. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine being mailed in a box?
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing they saw when they opened up this crate was his hair. Mm-hmm. And they gave him the last name Bush.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up staying with the coffins, mm-hmm. and he helped them with the Underground Railroad and is responsible for anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 slaves escaping through.
He was in there for like about a week or so, wasn't he?
He was in there for a couple
of weeks. He was in that box.
Yeah.
For our listening audience, we're talking with Liz Mitchell and Gladys Devane, and we're talking about the fall performance of Resilience, Indiana's Untold Story. Well, this Saturday, a little fundraiser for the play is going on. You want to talk a little bit about Mama Minnie's Juke Joint?
Mama Minnie's Juke Joint.
And why is it called Mama Minnie's?
That's my mother's name.
Oh, is it?
And her family came up from the South.
Okay.
She was an excellent cook and loved to dance.
Okay.
Party, party, party. She was a party. And so my brothers and I, we got that party spirit from her, and we loved to dance. We just got that from her. And besides that, there wasn't anything she couldn't cook.
Mm-hmm.
So it was my husband's idea.
Did she pass that down too, Liz?
Oh, yeah. The collard greens, don't miss it.
Okay.
Have you ever had Miss Liz's banana pudding?
Oh, no.
Okay. Do I need to say anything
else?
That says it all. Enough said.
So, in fact, I said to Liz when we prepared
collard greens.
I thought I would never finish cooking collard greens. She's the one giving the instructions on how to cook them. They are delicious. I said to her, Liz, but these will kill you. She said, but you'll die smiling.
We prepared 4 crates at 4 different times,
okay,
washing, and we put our husbands to work, mm-hmm, chopping and cleaning, and so we're ready with the collard greens.
Okay.
First come, first serve. Be there at 6 o'clock, Mommy Minnie's Juke Joint, mm-hmm, at Don Owens FOP, which is a Fraternal Order of Police.
Mm-hmm.
Want to thank the Fraternal Order of Police. They're backing us with this. A lot of people have bad things to say about the police department in their community, not Bloomington. So if you see a police officer out there, say thank you. They are supporting us not only with letting us have the hall, they wrote a check.
Mm-hmm.
You can't beat that.
Excellent.
So it's, you buy a plate. Mm-hmm. One plate for $15, two for $25. We're going to start serving food at 6 o'clock Saturday, June 18th, mm-hmm, at 2450 North Curry Pike. And we're going to sell food till it's gone. We're going to have a DJ there later on. We're going to do some dancing. We also have a dunk tank that's available as part of the fundraiser.
And Clarence,
the new fire chief of Bloomington,
okay,
Jason Moore, is going to be in the dunk tank.
Oh.
The new fire chief. He's new to the community, so come out and dunk him and get to meet the fire chief.
Did you talk to Clarence?
Like I said, Leela said,
did you get Clarence? I'm sure he'd love to get that dunk tank.
There's still time. Pastor Bruce Rose agreed to be in the dunk tank.
Oh, really?
As well as Jeff Albertson, he is our lead actor. He's a movie star. He's had TV credits. He also taught me to swim. But he is going to be in a dunk tank, and he's a retired Marine.
So how much will the dunk tank cost?
3 balls for $1.
All right.
Okay. And we'll have plenty of food. We're going to have fried chicken, macaroni and cheese, collard greens, cornbread. You get a choice of meat, 3 sides, cornbread, iced tea and lemonade, a drink, and dessert for $15.
Okay.
Sounds wonderful. I can't wait. That's my Saturday meal for sure.
Now, if you want something stronger than lemonade or iced tea, you're welcome to bring that.
Okay.
If you've got some moonshine.
Some moonshine.
We're really excited about that. So we're going to dance, play a few cards, and mostly eat some good food.
Now, I know that you collect a lot of black memorabilia.
Mm-hmm.
From the trips that you take around across the country.
Yes.
Are you going to have any of those things on display for the audience?
No, I will not. No, I don't have a way to protect it, and I can't stand there and watch it because I want to dance.
I can understand that.
Well, I want to go back to some of the, what kind of slavery was in Indiana? I mean, was it servitude like kind of thing? Or because we're not known for a cash crop like cotton or tobacco or things like that. So what kind of things?
Mostly service.
Service. Okay.
Yeah, mostly service. The story that I wrote about Polly. Polly was from Vincennes.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother, Jenny, was the slave brought in by a man named Hyacinthe LaSalle,
mm-hmm,
a Frenchman. And Jenny had 2 children, And Hyson was one of the richest men in Vincennes. He owned a tavern, the only hotel there. And Hyson said, because Jenny belongs to me, her children belong to me. And I'm sure it didn't tell us what he put them to work doing. Mm-hmm. The story that I wrote had him putting Polly to work in the saloon after she became of age, mm-hmm. and in the hotel, okay. Which seems quite plausible to me. Mm-hmm. But that case was taken to the Supreme Court in order for Polly to be released and freed. Nowhere do they say ever that Jenny was released, mm-hmm. but those were the kinds of things that that we know the servants did.
Okay. Now, I know that there's going to be auditions for the play. Would you let our listening audience know, for those that might be interested, when the auditions are going to take place, what type of parts they're going to be, and just talk a little bit about that, please.
Do you know? Okay. Well, we hadn't really decided yet when the auditions were
going
to be.
They're going to be sometime during, I think, the first or second week in July. But we will start, in fact, we will put out a call to all of the theaters and probably in the newspaper asking for auditions. There will be one person will have to play multiple parts. So we are looking for people who can act, who can sing. I don't think we have any, yeah, we do have dancing in the juke joint. So who can dance. We are looking for old people, mm-hmm. as well as middle-aged people and young, because we have some young children, a couple of scenes with young children. We have several scenes with high school students. And so it's going to be a broad cast, age-wise, ability-wise. And don't think for one minute that we're looking only for African-Americans. Both African-Americans, Caucasians, Latino, you know, it's going to be multidimensional racially.
Okay, I don't know if you guys ever watched The New Roots.
Yes.
But I'd like to hear your take on comparing the old roots with the new roots and what you like better or worse, or how do you feel about it?
Well, the New Roots made such an impression on me that or the old roots mm-hmm. made a bigger impression on me because mm-hmm. of the age, and when it came out I had watched it from every day. So this new didn't have quite the impact okay. on me. There were different scenes in the newer one mm-hmm. that I don't recall being in the old one, because they didn't really go into Chicken George serving in the Civil War mm-hmm. In the first one. And then the raping of his daughter-in-law mm-hmm. Was not in the first one, where her husband was watching that.
Right.
We knew that took place mm-hmm. in slavery. So they brought up some different aspects in slavery mm-hmm. that you didn't see in the first one. Both of them are very good. Mm-hmm. I recommend them to sit down with families and talk to them about kids. You know, if we don't remind people of things, humans are kind of dumb. Mm-hmm. We repeat stuff. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we won't repeat that kind of thing in a different form.
Right.
Because there's all kinds of slavery. I know slavery still goes on somewhere here in the world. And so as long as we remind ourselves how wrong that was, and then maybe the young people coming up might be able to get a sense, especially from the New Roots, why the Southern whites had such hatred. You know, you can't be better than me. That type of thinking. Maybe that would answer some of the questions, because I've had that question for years. Why do you hate somebody so bad that you would kill them and mutilate them? What are you getting out of that? So those feelings are so strong. And then to me, it seems like we're still fighting the Civil War, and it's 2016. And all the hatred that has been coming up in these last few years, that is some scary stuff.
We've talked a little bit about the fundraiser for Resilience, and we've talked about some of the struggles that you've had trying to get funding. The one thing we have not talked about is where people can send a check to help this project along.
Before she tells, do you want me to tell?
Yeah, you can tell.
In order to do this, in order to get funds, we had to have a 501c organization through which the funds could go. That organization could not be Ivy Tech, even though they were our sponsor. So Bloomington Playwrights Project immediately agreed, we will be your 501c. I used to be on that board. I've done a lot of acting for Bloomington Playwrights Project. They are a stellar organization. So they said, we will partner with you so that you can do this. So any check should be made out to Bloomington Playwrights Project or BPP, Resilience. Make sure you put in the memo line, Resilience, so that they can send you a tax-deductible statement for your contribution. That address is 107 West 9th Street, Bloomington, Indiana, 47404. Okay. That's Bloomington Playwrights Project, 107 West 9th Street, Bloomington, Indiana, 47404.
We also wanted to recognize the History Center here. They're giving us space for rehearsals.
Okay, we've got a couple of minutes left, so the floor is yours, lady, just to let our listening audience know the last little bit about Resilience.
Well, let's tell you this. The last thing I want to say about the Juke Joint, and also with Resilience, since we did not get the grant, and when we came home, like Gladys said, we thought, well, we can't do it. And my husband said, you're going to have to do it along with those other people you named. You can show them better than you can tell them. So put Resilience on and invite the Arts Commission or whoever to come down and see it. And you might want to say thank you to them because they have showed the resilience of Monroe County. We have gotten such a positive feedback from the community. A lot of people are excited about it. We are excited to put this play on. Indiana cannot tell its story without telling about African Americans. You can't celebrate a daggone thing and not have us included in it.
In fact, Liz said, they're having a celebration. I want to be in the picture. Blacks should be in the picture. And I said to her, not only do I want to be in the picture, I want to be on the first row. And so we are trying to move us to the first row.
So are you going to be acting in this one?
Oh, yes. Yes, she is.
I know you are a resident actor, so I was making sure that you're going to be there, too. So.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
We want to thank Liz Mitchell and Gladys Devane for joining us to talk about Mama Minnie's Juke Joint event scheduled for this coming Saturday night, where all the proceeds will support the fall performance of Resilience, Indiana's Untold Story. To learn more, reach out to Liz Mitchell at emitchell1441 at sbcglobal.net. That email address once again is emitch1441@sbcglobal.net.
Bring It On has an open submission policy, so if you have an idea for this program, let's hear it. Send an email to our volunteer staff. The address is bringiton@wfhb.org. We want to make sure we share everything and anything affecting the African American community with our listening audience in Bloomington and beyond. The email address, once again, is bringiton@wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from the Uptown Cafe, a Bloomington landmark since 1976. Serving Cajun Creole and home cooking specials every Tuesday and Wednesday evening, featuring a full bar serving fresh handcrafted cocktails. The Uptown Cafe is located in downtown Bloomington. More information is available online at the-uptown.com. Support for WFHB is also provided by Visit Evansville, sponsor of the annual Ola Festival, Latino Expo, offering Latin music international food, social services, information, and more. Open to all, Hola Festival and Latino Expo is on June 26th from noon to 6:30 p.m. at Bossy Field in Evansville. Additional information is available by calling 1-800-433-3025 or at the website visitevansville.com.
We've been waiting for a long time. Yes, we've been waiting for a long, long time. We've been waiting for a long time. But we ain't gonna wait no more. We're getting ready to rock and roll. We're gonna 1, 2, 3, 4.
Just heard The Boys Are Back in Town by the Bus Boys. Formed in Los Angeles in the late 1970s, the original lineup featured brothers Brian O'Neill, keyboard and vocals, Kevin O'Neill, bass and vocals, Gus Lauterman, he was vocals, Mike Jones, keyboard and vocals, Vic Johnson, guitar, and Steve Felix was drums. All of the original members were African American except Felix, who is of non-black heritage. Hispanic heritage. The group is best known for its appearance in the 1982 film 48 Hours, in which they performed their song New Shoes and The Boys Are Back in Town. The later song is also heard during the closing credits. Tonight's song brings attention to Mama Minnie's Juke Joint experience set for this Saturday evening.
This is Bring It On, the People's Forum for Black Culture in South Central Indiana and beyond. Are you a tweeter? You're invited to follow the WFHB News Twitter account. This is a great way to get breaking news and updates on what's going on behind the scenes and on the air with WFHB News. Go to twitter.com and search for WFHB News, or you can always visit WFHB News website at wfhb.org/news.
Bring It On is Indiana's only public affairs program dedicated to the African American community here on WFHB 91.3 FM and live on the web at wfhb.org. It's time now to give you the latest perspective on people, news, and issues affecting the black community. For Bring It On, I'm Lila Randall.
And I'm Cornelius Wright. Orlando mourns its dead. Gunman may have been homegrown. The Associated Press reports that Orlando mourned the 49 people slaughtered in the attack on a gay nightclub. as the White House and the FBI portrayed the killer Monday as an apparent homegrown extremist who espoused support for a jumble of often conflicting Islamic organizations. The last of the bodies were removed from the nightclub late Sunday, and vigils and makeshift memorials to the victims of the deadliest mass shooting in modern U.S. history began to take shape as counterterrorism authorities delved into gunman Omar Mateen's background and defended their handling of their previous contacts with him. Wielding an AR-15 semi-automatic rifle and a handgun, Mateen, a 29-year-old American-born Muslim, opened fire at the crowded Pulse Orlando Club early Sunday. He was killed in a gun battle with a SWAT team after police used explosives and a small armored vehicle to punch a hole in a wall and allow dozens of clubgoers to escape, police said. The tragedy shocked the nation and cast a pall over Orlando, known all around the globe as the home of Walt Disney World and other theme parks. We will not be defined by an act of cowardly hate, Mayor Buddy Dyer vowed. You know, it's a shame that we have to keep going through this, Leela, but it seems that every other month the same thing is happening, and we keep hearing the same thing, that no type of gun control is needed.
It's just really sad. You get the memo that there's going to be some kind of vigil downtown by the city county
tomorrow
building?
I did, okay. Yes. I'll be there.
I just think it's really sad that it just keeps happening over and over again. And why now? I mean, to me, guns have always been available. What's going on now in this climate that is making people feel the need that they could just go out and take lives? Well, and I also heard that he has been on the FBI's radar for a long time.
They've talked to him twice.
Yeah. So I think when there's a person of interest, but they said they never found anything. I don't know. I don't even know what to say. It's just really sad.
Well, I think I heard today that in President Obama's 8 years, that this is the 15th time he's had to speak on a mass shooting. I don't know if there's a correlation of people being so frustrated over a black president, or I don't know what it is. It's just a shame.
I do know he just purchased those guns, too, so it's just kind of sad. There was that one on Trump, but I don't want to give Trump more news than we already have to. I don't like talking about Trump unless I have to. And my son sent me an email saying that his name used to be Drump. Did you ever hear that?
I have not.
His name used to be Drump, like D-R-U-M-P-F or something like that. So he didn't like that name, so he changed it to Trump. So you guys out there, check me on that if you don't. That's what my son told me, and I've seen it on Facebook a lot, that his name used to be Drump. Well, anyway, that's the only thing I want to say about Drump, okay? So I'm not reading anything about him because I don't really care. But I will talk about the black actor wins big at the Tony Awards, which is good and amazing. There's so much diversity on Broadway right now, said winner David Diggs. This from the News One staff. The Tony Awards set the bar for diversity on Sunday evening as several actors and actresses of color were recognized for their work, a major difference from the Oscar So White controversy that ensued earlier this year. For the first time in the ceremony's history, 4 musical acting awards were nabbed by black actors. Broadway show hit Hamilton took home awards for the best lead actor, which was won by Leslie Odom Jr. Best featured actor, which was also given to Davi Diggs, and best featured actress, which was awarded to Renee Elise Goldsberry. Cynthia Erivo won an award for the role in The Color Purple. The nominees for different categories were diverse as well. Both Christopher Jackson from Hamilton and Brandon Victor Dixon from Shuffle Along were in the running for Best Featured Actor. Diggs said diversity productions like Hamilton serve as inspiration for young children of color who want to get involved in theater. There's so much diversity on Broadway right now, he said. It's nice to have it feeling a little more mainstream and a lot more inclusive.
I did not watch the Tonys, but I'm so glad to hear that there was some diversity and that we actually were represented.
It's about time.
Indeed.
I don't know how that's going to, I'm not sure, unless adults, families show kids actually theater, they don't really get an opportunity to see theater. So I think it's up to the parents to like teach kids about, you know, he says in here that kids can now see that, you know, that there's inclusion. I think it's more for, not necessarily for kids, but for actors to see that, you know, yeah, we got a chance to be in Broadway. Not a lot of people get to go to Broadway. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and we can actually start it right here in Bloomington, Indiana by taking all of our children to go see Resilience. Absolutely. Richard Sherman wants billionaires to pay for their own damn stadiums. While America wrestles with the question of whether to vote red or blue come November, ESPN radio host John Clayton proposed a new solution early this week. Vote navy, green, and gray. Vote for the smart, incisive, and candid Richard Sherman. Of course, Clayton was kidding, but if you were to pick one NFL player to lead a presidential ticket, Sherman would be a pretty deserving choice. Sherman proved that in an interview with Clayton on Monday, recommending a should-be-obvious plan for how to get America out of the red once more, stop making the every man and the every woman fit the bill every time a billionaire rolls into a city and wants to erect the latest and greatest stadium. Thinking on his feet and improvising what he'd want his campaign slogan to be, he'd settle on, "Make America the place you want to raise your kids." Sherman put forth what he deemed to be a pretty ingenious plan for our economy: make the rich pay for their own toys. "I'd get us out of this deficit," he told Clayton. "I'd stop spending billions of taxpayer dollars on stadiums and probably get us out of debt and maybe make the billionaires who actually benefit for the stadiums pay for them. That kind of seemed like a system that would work for me." Yes. The stick of owners handing taxpayers the sky-high cost of state-of-the-art sports venues has irked effectively everyone in the 99% for a long while, but to no avail for our collective wallet. The most recent obscene example of this is the ongoing situation in St. Louis. As the city and state's residents are still on the books for more than $100 million to pay for the Rams Stadium, even though the team divorced the district in favor of LA earlier this year. Suffice it to say that the stadium Sherman plays in is certainly not exempt from this exorbitance either. Seattle's CenturyLink Field cost $300 million in taxpayer dollars alone, despite the fact that the franchise owner, Paul Allen, is one of the wealthiest people on the planet, as Deadspin aptly noted. He's absolutely right. These guys have more money than they'll be able to spend in their great-great-great-grandkids' lives, and we're footing the bill. Yet we can't afford to get a ticket to the game most of the time.
I just don't understand it. Was it down in Conseco where they weren't even paying rent, or it was one?
Oh, they get tax exemptions.
Who lives or plays somewhere and don't have to pay rent? That doesn't even make any sense to me. But yep. They added a 2% tax.
32 NFL teams and a lot of NBA teams.
So the city is looking at, well, the city will get this money back by having people come to the city, but I agree they should pay for their own buildings, especially when they want to put their names on it. Okay, so it looks like I'm gonna have to talk about Donald Trump. Okay, after all, okay, guys. So Donald Trump suggests Obama is a secret Muslim. Again, I'm surprised we don't have the birth certificate. And Donald's not saying anything about not releasing his taxes. Has everybody noticed that, right? He still hasn't released his taxes yet. I wonder why. He was apparently upset that President Obama did not use radical Islamic terrorism in the wake of Sunday's massacre. Who cares? Continuing his effort to dismiss critics with slurs and xenophobic comments, Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican presidential candidate, took aim at President Obama, suggesting he's a secret Muslim, writes the Daily Beast. "We're led by a man who is we're led by a man that either is not tough, not smart, or he's got something else in mind." Now, where did Obama go to school? Okay. Trump told Fox and Friends by phone Monday morning he was apparently upset that President Obama did not use radical Islamic terrorism in the wake of Sunday's massacre in Orlando, Florida. I'll finish and then I'll give my comments. The remark comes from The mark comes after he once again called Democratic Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas again. The comment came this time after Warren, who is of Native American heritage, lambasted him as a thin-skinned racist bully in a speech last week, writes the Washington Post. Pocahontas is at it again, Trump tweeted. Goofy Elizabeth Warren, one of the least productive U.S. senators, has a nasty mouth. No, seriously, delete your account, Warren tweeted back, notes the Post. As a result of one of Senator's supporters secured Pocahontas.com and redirected it to Warren's campaign site. He's good. He's known for doing that kind of stupid stuff.
You know, the only people more ignorant than Donald Trump are the ones that are supporting him. He's just a joke.
You know, I spoke to a person that who is going to vote for Trump, and I brought up some of his fallacies, and they just said, yeah, we know.
Yep.
So there's nothing that you can say to somebody that says, you know, do you know the way he talks about women and any other race? And they say, yeah, I know. But they feel that he is not bought by the establishment. And I said, well, you know what? Whenever I make a contribution, I am not getting interest back on my contribution, as Donald is when he put his money into the Republican convention, you know, in the nomination, you know, for him running. So he's getting money because he put his money in. But when we make a donation, we might get a little bit of a tax break if we make a donation. But we're not, you know, it's just they don't understand that he's, I don't know.
They
have no words for the man other than Trump, now that you know his real name.
And that was a look at African American headline news from around the world for this week. Tune in again next week for the latest news on and for the African American community. We want to know what you think of current black issues. Send your comments to Bring It On at WFHB.org. For Bring It On, I'm Cornelius Wright.
And I'm Leela Randall. You're listening to Bring It On, Indiana's only public affairs program dedicated to the African American community, here on WFHB 91.3 FM, on your radio, and live on the web at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from the Uptown Cafe, a Bloomington landmark since 1976. Serving Cajun Creole and home cooking specials every Tuesday and Wednesday evening, featuring a full bar serving fresh handcrafted cocktails. The Uptown Cafe is located in downtown Bloomington. More information is available online at the-uptown.com.
Oh,
things.
You just heard New Shoes, another song by the Bus Boys. Tonight's songs bring attention to Mama Minnie's Juke Joint experience set for this Saturday night.
It's now time to bring you the events of interest in the Black community for Bring It On. I'm Leela Randall.
And I'm Cornelius Wright. And speaking about Mama Minnie's Juke Joint, it's going to be this Saturday night, June 18th, from 6 p.m. to midnight. It's going to be soul food, soul music, and soul fun. And it's going to be a fundraiser. All proceeds will go to Resilience, Indiana's Untold Story, coming this October to the John Waldron Auditorium. If you have any questions, you may contact Liz Mitchell at emitch1441@sbcglobal.net. Once again, that's going to be Mama's Minnie's Juke Joint, and it's going to be a fundraiser. So, and you can raise funds while having fun. It's going to be at the Dan Owens FOP Lodge at 2450 North Curry, Saturday night, 6 p.m. to midnight. It's $15 per person, $25 per couple. Get there early so you make sure that the food does not run out.
And remember, soul does not necessarily mean Black. Soul means what you feel in your heart, okay? And everybody has a soul. So I want everybody of every nationality, race, creed, color to come on out and enjoy some soul music and some soul food, okay?
Indeed.
Relive the 90s with this summer's R&B hip-hop concerts. Nothing inspires a trip down memory lane like hearing the music of your youth, the songs you used to turn all the way up with the windows rolled all the way down. You can revisit the 90s this summer at multiple concerts and festivals featuring the hip-hop and R&B stars who dominated the charts at the end of the century. Most are in Indianapolis, but to see some performers, you'll have to take a short trip to Chicago or Cincinnati. So here's the lineup, guys. Remember the 90s Music Festival, June 18th at the Baker's Life Fieldhouse, featuring Keith Sweat, you know what he does, Casey and JoJo, Mint Condition, Silk, MC Light, SWV, and Houdini. The best summer jam, I Love the 90s, August 13th at the Farm Bureau Insurance Lawn at White River State Park, featuring Vanilla Ice, Color Me Bad, Coolio, Tone Loc, Young MC, Rob Bass, Cool MD, and All for One. Now, at the Indiana Black Expo Music Heritage Festival, which is July 15th at the American Legion Mall. Of course, guys, this is free. Featuring Backstreet, Al Hudson, and One Way, the original Lakeside. Oh, they got original, so we all know Lakeside. Were they in the 90s? That was in my era, so Lakeside wasn't in the 90s, but I think I might want to go to that one. And also at the Indiana Black Expo Music Heritage Festival, too. So I think one is Friday night, one is Saturday night?
Correct.
It will be July 15th at the Baker's Life Fieldhouse featuring New Edition, who my sisters truly love, Kim, I think it's K-E-M or Kim, and Drew Hill.
You know, I saw something on Facebook today, and it was asking which era had the best music, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s. Uh-huh. And I got to thinking, wow, I've been alive in every one of those eras. And I came up, for me personally, it was the 70s.
I can't believe you said the 70s, because I was going to say the 70s too. I just taped this thing from, I thought it was going to be Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson, but it was a Time Warner commercial, and they had all the 70s hits and all the people, and I was like, this is what I remember being in my room singing to, not in a car because I wasn't driving at the time, but singing at the top of my lungs. All the different types of music. I mean, the Ohio Players, you know, and just it was
indeed,
just a great, it was a great year. I think I liked the 70s the best too. I was a teenager then. That was the best.
70s it is.
Okay.
The Bloomington Pride is to hold a candlelight vigil honoring Orlando Pulse victims. Bloomington Pride it will hold the candlelight vigil at City Hall on Tuesday, June 14th at 7:30 p.m. to pay tribute to the victims of the recent mass shooting at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida. More than 100 people were killed or injured in the attack, which is regarded as the largest mass murder in U.S. history. We expect roughly 500 attendees at the vigil. Now more than ever, it is vital that we come together as one community to show that hate and terror cannot triumph against love and equality. On Tuesday night, we'll gather not only to mourn and honor victims of this senseless tragedy, but also to begin the healing process and think about ways we can affect more positive change. Leaders from a number of Bloomington and Monroe County organizations are also expected to attend, with many offering their own thoughts and perspectives to show that the community stands in solidarity with Orlando and the LGBTQ people around the world. The Quarryland Men's Chorus will also perform during the vigil, using the power of music to further unite attendees. Bloomington Pride is also creating an initiative called Stand With Pride, where we're partnering with local bars who stand in support and solidarity with the LGBT community. Bloomington area establishments are safe and inclusive space for LGBTA people, and we want to make sure that it is clear to all. It was a senseless tragedy, and as we were talking about it earlier, it mentioned in modern history, because this is really a horrific event, but it's not the largest mass murder. There have been more large mass murders in the Black communities over the years, but in recent history, it most definitely is. Unfortunately, it's become all too common.
Yes, it has. If you have an event or happening the African American community should know about, please send the information directly to Bring It On staff. Or if you want additional information about a calendar item that you've heard tonight, contact us at bringiton@wfhb.org.
We want to thank Liz Mitchell and Gladys Devane for joining us to talk about Mama Minnie's Juke Joint event scheduled for this coming Saturday night, where all proceeds will support the fall performance of Resilience, Indiana's Untold Story. To learn more, reach out to Liz Mitchell at emitch1441@sbcglobal.net. That email address once again is emitch1441@sbcglobal.net.
Our show's executive producer is Clarence Boone, who we want to put in that dunk tank.
Indeed.
Tank. Yes, we want Clarence to go there. And with the help of WFHB News Department Director Joe Crawford, our news editor is Michael Nolan. Tonight's board engineer is Floyd Hobson. Our original theme music was created by Jamil Effiam, with additional background tracks by David Baker. For WFHB, I'm Leela Randall.
And I'm Cornelius Wright. Be sure to tune in next Monday, June 20th at 6 p.m., for another edition of Bring It On, right here on your community radio station, WFHB.